Welcome to Side Podcast episode 69, What a Difference a Brawn Makes. Coming up on today's show, we discuss Coulthard's retirement and Donington Park's gain, plus we interview some friends at the British GP.
So is this next week's podcast early?
No, we're pretending that it's Monday.
Last Monday.
Yeah, so we're not going to talk about this week's news. It's all going to be last week's news. We're kind of out of date.
Right. You're not very well, are you?
No, I'm rubbish.
You're getting a bit better.
Yeah.
You've sounded worse. But you're still not perfect.
You can follow F1 Minute through the week. Track my progress.
See how much you deteriorated.
Yeah.
And how much better you are now.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get on with it. Good
week, bad week. It's been a good week for teams as Max wrote a letter saying that he wants costs to be reduced by at least 50%, but he's asking them to come up with the suggestions. So it's a good week as it's up to them to decide how to achieve the goal.
So he's finally admitted he doesn't know what he's doing.
Basically.
And he doesn't have all the answers, which we've known for a very long time.
It's been a bad week for the Dutch. Guido van der Garde's court case against Force India has been referred to a British judge as the Dutch courts say they just aren't competent to rule on such a matter.
They actually said that?
Basically.
We're not competent. What do they mean?
Well, I think what they mean is they've never seen anything like it before, so they don't know how to rule it.
I think what it is, they're not interested in F1 since Jos left.
It's been a good week for Coulthard as he got to tour the McLaren Technology Centre with some friends of his. He offered the most in a charity auction and won the prize, taking with him Adrian Newey, Christian Horner and Martin Brundle. I'm guessing McLaren think this was a bad week.
I think they all took it in good faith, to be honest with you. I'm surprised that Martin Brundle didn't make a mention about it. Unless I missed it on the ITV coverage.
We did watch it back. And
he never said anything about it. I thought he'd be full of it. Very quiet.
It's been a bad week for small teams as Frank Williams has deduced that the smaller wings from next year onwards could cost the teams up to 25% of sponsorship income due to a lack of space.
Surely the lack of space would mean an increase in price for the remaining space.
Yeah, you would think.
What's he talking about there? I don't understand that at all.
Not good business sense.
No. News
and views. Before the British GP weekend, Baz commented on SoPodcast.com and said that he bought his tickets from MotorRaceTickets.com, but he didn't get them. In fact, the website just disappeared.
This is not a great start
No. To
the race weekend at all. Very bad news. Many people seem to have got caught up in this scam. MotorRaceTickets.com, they managed to get a really good Google ranking, and they had a website that looked semi-official, and a lot of people were drawn in by their scam. We had quite a few comments, quite an active thread, that one, of many people who've been caught up, including there was Baz, Sean, Marin, Helen, Paul, Seawoods, Danny, Disgruntled PJ, Matthew, Wendy, Ruth, Mark L, Harry G, Grant, Richard R, and Owen, all got scammed by the same guy, and none of them got their Silverstone tickets, and many of them don't appear to have got their money back as yet.
It must be really disappointing. Some people were quite pragmatic and, you know, settled to watch it on ITV with a cold beer.
Yes.
But other people were actively trying to get their money back.
I think most people are still trying to pursue that. And I think we had PCK Adams left a comment on the site saying that she's pursuing some lines of inquiry. And some other people are at least taking it farther. And hopefully, at the very least, everybody will get their money back and won't lose out.
Also, before the Grand Prix on Thursday, David Coulthard announced he would be retiring from F1 at the end of the season.
Aww.
He's still going to work with Red Bull, apparently, presumably in the same way that Schumacher works with Ferrari,
right?
Consulting.
When it suits him, then.
Testing and stuff.
Oh, right, okay.
Since then, Coulthard has said he's not really interested in any other series, although he's not going to say never, and he would prefer Vettel to be his replacement. Most of the speculation appears to be that way inclined, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, there doesn't appear to be anyone else in the running, which is slightly weird, because Red Bull, given that everybody assumes it's going to be Vettel, why haven't Red Bull announced it yet? There doesn't seem to be any reason for delaying that kind of announcement. Maybe just they want to let the dust settle and they might do something before the German Grand Prix.
Or it might not be Vettel. They might surprise us.
Well, they could do. No one we've spoken to seems to think it'll be anyone but him. But I guess Alonso may be free.
Also, ITV let slip that Coulthard is retiring just in time to welcome his first child into the world, so that may have had some kind of sway on his decision, but then again, it may not.
Oh, I'm sure it absolutely did. That was a bit of Ted news.
Yes.
Actually, Ted had the scoop there on ITV.
Ted baby news.
We didn't have a jingle for that.
No.
Hopefully we don't need to make one either.
No.
The other thing that's worth mentioning is apparently at the end of the race, on Sunday evening, there's a big stage set up and drivers come on and talk to the fans, and Fraggle was there, and she said that Coulthard let slip that he's in negotiations with the BBC, although he wouldn't say what it is.
Well, it must be TV stuff.
Well, it might be, but is he going to do both? Is he going to do Red Bull stuff and BBC things? I do wonder if the BBC aren't thinking of having some kind of studio back in England permanently, like you do in NASCAR. Mm-hmm. So like back in the studio, and then Coulthard wouldn't have to leave the country and he could stay close to his family. Maybe.
This was all announced just before the Thursday press conference, which Coulthard was in. So, of course, a lot of the questions were about his decision.
Mm.
But more importantly, there was an embarrassing situation with Hamilton and Button, who were also in the press conference.
It wasn't embarrassing. The press conference itself was very funny. I thought it was a really good press conference. It was the situation that happened after and post press conference that was the problem. But a lot of the things, it was actually going to quite a good banter, I thought, between all the English drivers in there.
One of the questions put to Hamilton was, at the Reebok launch the other day, you were quoted as saying you thought you were fitter than Jensen. Is that the case? And Hamilton said, I've noticed that Jensen has a bit of a belly,
so,
which is quite
cheeky.
And Jensen went, they're called muscles. And then they said that Hamilton should challenge Jensen to do a triathlon, and Hamilton was reluctant. So David Coulthard said, he's throwing down a man challenge. You can't turn down a man challenge.
Definitely can't do that.
Is a man challenge different to a normal challenge?
Well, it involves pride, bravado.
Of course.
You can't
men
do that.
Men stuff.
Mm.
So Hamilton sort of ummed and ahed and said he'd think about it, and then
agreed. No, he didn't know. Yeah, he said he didn't think about it. He said he checked his diary and he said, I'm free. And they said, it's a date. Let's do it. Let's have this triathlon battle.
So they made a bet out of it, didn't they?
There was a monetary sum was put down for a charity of Hamilton's choice, should he beat Jensen, I believe. But then the press conference was over, and then Anthony Hamilton put a spanner in the works.
Yeah, he said, no, you're not doing it.
Yeah. I can kind of see his point, actually, because it was a bit of a setup, wasn't it?
Well, apparently, we'll talk about this later, but we were guests of Honda at the weekend, and during the annual Friday night pub quiz, Nick Fry mentioned that it was a setup.
Yeah, he basically said that it was pre-planned. He has a lot of faith in Jensen's fitness. He's seen him take part in triathlons, and he's very impressed. He didn't take too kindly to Hamilton suggesting that, you know, he could beat Jensen, so they dreamed up this scheme. They pre-planned the money.
Yep.
Presumably, Coulthard was in on it. I'm guessing the journalist must have been in on it as well.
That question must have come from somewhere.
And the whole thing was a setup. And that, I believe, is the reason why Anthony decided to back out of it a bit.
Yeah, you can see why he did it. But unfortunately, it's come across as another bit of bad PR for Hamilton.
It seems to follow him around.
Yeah.
Bad PR, doesn't it?
Didn't look good in the papers.
No.
And Axis of Oversteer, they said that Hamilton had been grounded by his dad. That's why he couldn't do it.
You're not going out to play in that triathlon. I'll tell you what, they're onto something there, because how many times do you hear drivers complain about being in the best car and the best team? All the drivers at the end of the year should get together for a running race. They should all go against each other, no teams involved, and just see who can run the fastest or who can run the farthest.
That's called the Olympics.
Yeah. Are we following the wrong sport?
I think so. Whilst you could say that DC's announcement was quite timely ahead of his home race, Bernie Eccleston is the master of bad timing and announced that Silverstone has lost the GP from 2010 to Donington Park.
That was a bit mean, that it's timing.
Really mean.
Yeah, he didn't like those BRDC members, does he? And he desperately went out of his way to make their life as uncomfortable as they possibly could.
I mean, it actually did put an instant downer on things in the crowd. You could feel it.
Yeah, it did.
I mean, the action spiced things up again, but...
Yes, and I'm sure he's been thinking about it for a long time. I think the deadline ran out, coincidentally, on the Friday. But it was incredibly poor timing on Byron's part, and not very nice.
ITV had an interesting story. Simon Gillette, one of the owners of Donington Ventures Leisure Limited, said funding would come from a debenture scheme or long-term bond.
Yeah, a bit of a scoop, actually. This was an interview with Louise Goodman when this bombshell was dropped. Originally, it was assumed that there would be some kind of...
private investor.
Which we were assuming to be...
Bernie.
Right. But now it seems like that isn't the case, and the fans are going to pay for it.
In more ways than one.
Quite literally. It's not going to work, is it? A debenture scheme. I mean, who's going to buy a brick of Donington?
Well,
Formula One brick.
The biggest problem is, I don't really understand what that means.
Well, in the past, a number of other sports have tried it. And what it usually involves is buying a seat for a very high markup for an extended period of time. Or it could be buying a custom engraved brick, for example, in the grandstand. That kind of thing, it's sort of that idea, whereby you pay an awful lot of money to the building of a new complex in order that the commercial agreements don't need to stack up in that area.
I thought Simon's quote was quite telling because he said, unfortunately, there's not a mystery fairy godfather with a £100 million cheque out there.
Because it's always a fairy godfather.
Yeah. How many times have you heard a fairy godfather? What he means is, yeah, Bernie won't give us the money.
Yeah, he's changed his mind.
Yeah.
Actually, he's thought about it. Now we've got the contract, he's thinking, ooh, I quite like that money in my pocket, actually, gaining it interest.
If they can get it up to scratch, I don't have a problem with the race moving. But what we saw of Donington last year was nowhere near good enough.
Nope. And the question is, what happens if they don't get it up to scratch? Because a lot of people are assuming that if it doesn't go ahead, it automatically, the British Grand Prix automatically falls back to Silverstone, which I'm not entirely sure is correct. I mean, if this doesn't go ahead, if this doesn't happen, it could be quite a convenient get-out clause for Bernie to just drop the British Grand Prix altogether.
So if it's not ready, just no GP?
Until it is ready, presumably. So if it takes 5 years, well, there's no British GP for at least 5 years or more, until it suits Bernie to bring the Grand Prix back to England.
I think he probably does want to get it done, though, because he's got his best friend working on the racetrack.
Oh, Tilke?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, apparently the only guy who can design racetracks.
Surely someone else must be able to do it. It's just maths, isn't it?
It's a bit of a glass ceiling in that kind of career, isn't it?
It's ridiculous. There's just one man in the whole world.
Yeah, who can design a curve.
Another thing that I don't know if they've thought of it or not, but Silverstone becomes the world's busiest heliport during the race weekend, which is like an actual fact.
Right.
I mean, you know, how many heliports are there?
Busy heliports in this country, probably not that many.
But then I don't see how they're going to keep East Midlands Airport functioning throughout a GP weekend if it's that busy.
That's a good question. The helicopters are going to mess that up a lot, actually. It's non-stop. Presumably they could come in from a different direction, but the flight paths change based on wind and weather and stuff. So yeah, that's going to cause chaos too. And I'm sure there's going to be objections. There's going to be objections from everybody. There's going to be objections from the airport, from the councils, from the people who live nearby. No one's going to be happy with this.
We have a lot more thoughts on this coming up in our weekend discussion. If you've got any comments or feedback, why not leave us a voicemail? It's free if you're a Skype user. Find us under the username SidePodcast. Or you can ring us in the UK on 012128-TRACK. Internationally, it's +44 121 288 7225. If you're the more shy and retiring type, you can always email me, christine@sidepodcast.com. This is probably the only race we're going to attend this year, isn't it?
Oh, I do hope so. I'm exhausted.
I know.
It's, what, 5 days later we're recording this, and still I'm tired. I haven't recovered.
We're too far behind.
Too much
we're tired.
Fun.
I'm ill. It's just not good.
No.
Although it was good.
It was brilliant.
Yeah.
It was the most amazing 3 days of all time.
We were very lucky to be guests at Honda Dreamfields, just like we were last year. Dreamfields is Honda's campsite for media types. God knows what we were doing there, but USP Content invited us.
Yeah, we haven't done much work for them this year.
No.
I think they must have mistook us for someone else. Because last year we did loads of stuff for them and, you know, it made sense to be there. But this year, we're just really hanging around.
Honda like to call it posh camping because it's got a free bar, free food, massive television screen, posh toilets, free deck chair, which we didn't really get much use of.
They got wet and they didn't get dry again. So not much use of the whole deck chairs.
But here is the epitome of posh camping.
Mm.
Room service to your tent.
No, you're not making that up either, are you?
No, there's a little card that said, here is room service. If you want crisps or sandwiches, just order.
Phone this number in the middle of a field, in the middle, under the middle of nowhere, as Steve in the UK put it on the live comments. Absolutely in the middle of nowhere. And yeah. Give us a call, tell us what you want, and we'll bring your food to your tent.
We actually didn't do it because...
we didn't have the nerve.
Well,
who would? Be honest.
The thing is, it was just a mobile number and just feel a bit guilty, like bringing someone up there, yeah, can I have some crisps, please? When there's just a tent over there, just walk.
Just come traipsing across in the rain with a can of coconut. No, I wouldn't have the nerve to do it. But I love the idea. I love the concept.
Now, it's worth pointing out that we're always late for stuff.
It's an internationally renowned thing. Side podcast equals late, normally. As this podcast proves, 5 days late.
Two things you need to know about Side Podcast when we go to events. We're always late and we eat ice cream.
Yes.
The Honda Dreamfields info said they'd be ready for people to arrive at about 2 p.m. Guess what?
Yeah.
We rocked up at 8 a.m.
It's fair to say the campsite wasn't a campsite when we got there, was it?
It wasn't quite ready.
I think they might have been. We did warn them in an email beforehand what time you're going to arrive in time for free practice one. It still was a little bit of a surprise. And we were definitely first in the field.
Yeah, I think the tents were up. But that was about it.
That was all there was.
The rest needed doing. So we just took our tickets and headed to the circuit. Free practice one, we watched from the outside of Copse overlooking the pit exit. And really, the main thing to note was the digi flag.
How could you miss the digi flag?
It was incredibly
bright.
It was
miles away. It was almost positioned just before Maggers. And we're sat right back in Copse, right behind up in the rafters as well.
Yeah.
And it dominated your field of view. A really, really, really bright flashing green light.
Or a red light.
Yes, when there was an accident on track, it was a red light. But the green was just unbelievably bright.
When Hamilton exited the pits for the first time, He basically stopped in the exit, you know, to wave at everyone and give everyone a good look.
Yeah.
We thought maybe he was broken or something.
Yeah. Not a good start to the weekend. But no, he soon got going. And I'll tell you something, the Toyotas, they sounded rough, didn't they?
Oh, they really did.
No one else seemed to have a problem. I mean, we're used to the Honda not sounding the best or the smoothest engine.
The thing is, Honda just sounds sort of consistently bad. Whereas the Toyota, it was like, when it was coming out of the pits
broken.
It was wrong.
Yeah. Although it got better when it got up to speed. And they seemed to tune it out as the first practice got on. But at first, that was very noticeable.
It's quite a nice, it was quite nice proof that practice is useful.
Yes. Yeah, it's worth spending time watching practice. It's not, well, although, to be honest with you, the stands were quite empty. There wasn't that many people around us, especially the Vodafone stand that was right next to us, because there was nobody in that. So that we now know that Vodafone fans, not real Formula One fans.
Not free practice fans.
It was open, but there was nobody who chose to sit in it.
Alonso's engine blew up again, which, if you include testing, must be 5 Renault failures.
Yes.
In 11 days.
Yeah, they got problems.
That's a serious problem.
Engine homologation. That's all I got to say.
It's like when Ferrari did that at the beginning. Every 5 minutes, the Ferrari engine was breaking down.
Yeah.
Now it's Renault's turn.
It caused serious problems for Ferrari because Alonso dumped a bunch of oil on track. Second guy along, because Glock had a wobble, I think, as well. Second guy along, braked on the oil. Felipe Massa spun it around, ended up in the barriers, rode off his car.
I'm surprised, actually, the amount of cement dust that they put down on that oil, because we could see the dust billowing from behind the buildings.
Yeah, the machines that come along, they have a habit of hoovering it up and then throwing out the top and spreads it around the track some more, which doesn't seem that intelligent.
Probably all gets in our lungs.
Yeah, we could see it. In the far distance, there was just plumes and plumes of cement dust.
Still, Massa managed to finish on top despite being in the barrier.
Yeah, no one was going to beat that time with that amount of cement dust on track. And Kubica, he wasn't coming out again.
He wasn't even going to come out.
Any of that. So no one was going to beat that time. It did put a bit of a downer on the session because it was a lot of downtime and a lot of fans.
Not many cars.
A lot of fans left the stands, the ones that were in our stand. And that was really the end of the session.
During the break, Honda had given us a voucher for a free program, but we looked over someone's shoulder and decided we didn't want it.
It hadn't improved on last year. We bitched and moaned about that thing last year. Nobody paid the slightest bit of attention to the date. It's just as bad. Free program. Usually costs £10. Mm-hmm. And we decided against redeeming it.
Well,
because couldn't be bothered to make the effort or even to carry it.
I think they must go out and pick the worst pitches in the world. I mean, they really are awful. Because there are bad pitches and then there are the pitches in this program.
Yeah, they must be the cheapest or worst photographers known to man.
I really think that they are choosing bad pitches on purpose.
Deliberately, just to make the program look as bad as it possibly can be.
You couldn't think that they were good.
No, nothing to recommend. And if you spent £10 on that thing, more fool you is all I can say, because it's not worth the paper it's written on.
Unless you didn't know that. In which case,
we told you last year. You should have been paying more attention.
We did go and pick up our Kangaroo TV, though.
Yeah, we pre-booked it, actually.
Yeah, we liked it so much last year that we pre-booked it this year. And I just want to say that the process is really easy. You go on the website, you pay, you print out your barcode, you take it with you.
Yeah, I would like to offer a tiny bit of criticism for them, because they haven't improved year on year as much as I hoped they would. Last year, I think I remember saying that the screen was a little bit washed out and didn't have as many colours as you'd expect from a portable TV. And this year, it's definitely not improved. And a couple of times, I found myself poking the screen, because you know you have these little buttons on screen.
Yeah.
A bit like an iPod Touch or an iPhone.
No, it's because you use an iPhone
all
the time.
I think that it felt like it needed to be a touch interface, and they haven't really kept up with...
Only because you use one, though.
Yeah, but it's a bad UI design.
No.
In my opinion.
No, because I could see it had buttons, so I used the buttons. I didn't try and prod the screen.
Okay, well, year on year, it hasn't improved that much. That's all I'm saying. It's a good device, but I was expecting more this year.
So we took our Kangaroo TV and wandered round to Club, quite possibly the absolute opposite end of the circuit to where we were.
You couldn't get much farther away, no.
I can't adequately explain how beautiful it was to be sat there.
What, Club?
Yeah.
It's a good spot, isn't it?
It was, and the sun was out, and the clouds were just lovely.
Yes.
And you could see the track for miles in all directions. It just was.
It was the
beautiful.
Nicest part of the weekend, without question. A Club is an uncovered grandstand, so we wouldn't have gone there if it was looking remotely bad. But in the sun, it's very, very lovely, and you get to see a lot of the action. And FP2, it was manic, wasn't it? It was non-stop compared to the disparity of FP1, where it was a bit intermittent and cars took a while to go out. Then there was a red flag. FP2, non-stop.
And we got a good shot of Nakajima across the grass.
A couple of people went wide there.
Yeah.
Nakajima did it more than once, so we managed to get him. Three or four times, in fact, I think Nakajima went wide. But you could see the different lines that drivers were taking down there. I think it's the first major braking zone of the lap. So frequently drivers, the brakes are a bit cold and they get it a bit wrong. So it's all go.
Gluck broke down right opposite us. And we basically took a picture as he broke down, as the car was picked up, as he pushed it.
You took some nice pictures of that Batman livery, which we haven't mentioned yet, but that's a half-assed livery, isn't it? If ever you saw one.
It made no effort whatsoever. Two little bats on the side pod things.
On the end plates of the side pods and on the rear wing, they also painted them a bit black. And it was rubbish. I mean, you have to say that Red Bull would do a better job.
Absolutely. Well, the thing is, when I heard the news initially, I was quite excited. Oh, yeah. There's going to be a Batmobile on track.
And also Toyota, they're doing something with a livery. Yes!
Well,
finally, after however many years in Formula 1, 7 years or something with the same livery, finally they're going to change. No.
Okay. Well, I was quite excited because I thought, the Batmobile's going to go around on track. That's going to be really cool. Yeah. And they had it in front of the Toyota stand. The Batmobile is not nice.
It's not an attractive looking car, is it? You described it as a pig.
Yeah, well, there's a video, isn't there? A Toyota video.
They ran it around the track. Glock ran it around the track on Thursday.
Yeah, and there's a shot of it coming towards you, and it just looks like a big pig.
Yeah, it's ugly. Fast, apparently. Apparently quite a good car, and it's obviously a real car that can actually drive, as opposed to a Hollywood studio model. However, I'm not too sure this was the best tie-in for a Formula One team. It didn't really work out so well for them. What I really thought was slightly weird was the bats that the drivers had on their bellies. It just looked like Yano's nan had sewn it on the day before.
After all the track action, well, after all the F1 track action, there was lots of other stuff going on. I don't know.
Not a lot of interest in anything else.
No. We went back to Dreamfields. Now, it's slightly unfair because we were super early, but because we'd been out on track, actually on the track, everyone else had arrived and settled in. So it looked like we were the last ones. It looked like we were late.
Well, when everything was organised and we finally turned up with our stuff, we were the last people to the pie.
So unfair. We were there in time for the Honda pub quiz.
Now, they did this last year, and I have been troubled ever since because I didn't get the one Formula One question right.
Mm-hmm.
But this year we couldn't take part because we were busy podcasting at the time.
And we got told off, didn't we?
Yeah, because we were supposed to be in a team. We were already allocated teams and we were busy working behind the quiz. Yeah, but Murray was hosting it.
I sent you to take some pictures, didn't I?
Yeah, and Mr. Murray Walker, the best pub quiz host in the world.
Really?
Well, apart from when he gave the answers away, forgot to ask the question, and then they'd also written the little question cards quite small, so he couldn't really read it. But apart from that, brilliant. I mean, who better to host a pub quiz than Murray Walker?
Really? What about Vicky Butler-Henderson from last year?
Well, she was cuter. Actually, I was disappointed in Vicky.
Yeah.
Because Stephen Roy went to the BMW Pit Lane Park in Manchester.
Mm-hmm.
She was there.
Ah, oh, she didn't come and see you.
She knew. We said last week that we'd be at Honda Dreamfield. She knew I'd be there.
Yeah.
And I think she deliberately avoided me.
That's a shame, isn't it? I bet you're bitterly disappointed.
Well, I missed her.
Talking of the BMW Pit Lane Park, when we were at testing, Fraggle pointed out that the reason it's moved may be because of the new Porsche building that has been built at Silverstone.
Right.
It's right in the way of where the Pit Lane Park was.
Yeah, interestingly, it was on our circuit map. We were given a little Honda booklet and it said Pit Lane Park on it.
Yeah, so they must have assumed it was going
to
be there.
It was supposed to be there. But you're right, the Porsche building is a huge, huge driving experience over the far side of the circuit, just about where the Pit Lane Park was last year. And possibly BMW didn't want to be giving Porsche all that promotion.
They were either in their space or they didn't want to be near them.
Yes.
Or any of the above.
It's a good point. Nobody else has sort of raised that one. And I think I'm with Fraggle on that.
Well, the Porsche people will be a bit upset that the GP's not there anymore. Well, I know other stuff happens at Silverstone, but that must be a big part of their exposure.
Because they've just made a massive building.
Built all this stuff and roads infrastructure. And buildings, and now it's gone.
Yeah, what it's for is to let anyone who's just bought a brand new Porsche to go test out their car on a proper dedicated test track and to learn how the car works. And there's lots of driving experiences and that kind of thing at Silverstone. And so presumably that will continue. I don't see everybody up in sticks
at Donington. I don't think that it would stop, but it just must be a big chunk of their exposure to people has gone now.
Yeah, absolutely, because we didn't know it was there until we arrived on Friday.
Anyway, I was in the media tent while the pub quiz was going on.
You were working?
Yeah, and we were watching Five Live do their Friday night show.
Mm.
And that's actually why I sent you outside to take pictures, because you were laughing too much.
I might be on there. I've listened back. I don't know if it's me, but it was funny.
Someone cackling in the background.
It was, yeah, you might be able to hear me. It was really funny.
Well,
it
was Anthony Davidson was there, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was
hilarious.
Really knocking Massa. And also Alo White, I don't really know what he does. He must do other sports, but he was quite funny too.
Once I'd finished all my work, then I could have some fun. We went and had a beer in the Big Marquee, where they had a wonky pool table.
Had a bit of a slope on it.
Yeah.
Quite an extreme slope on it, actually.
That's why you think you lost.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, of course. And a Batak Pro, which is one of those big wall things where you have to hit the lights when they come on, different places.
It's like a massive real-life version of Simon, is the way I describe it. It
tests your reactions. Apparently, Jensen is an expert, and he used it at Renault.
Yeah,
for like
a
training.
Long time ago. Yeah, yeah. He's very good at it. Does he hold the world record or something on it?
Oh, I don't know.
It was some fact about it.
Two people went up in our estimations that evening.
Right.
Mr. Nick Fry.
Yes.
Turns out that he spent Friday evening in a tent slumming it with the rest of us.
No kidding. He couldn't be any higher up in Honda F1, but he does believe in this green eco image that the team were portraying.
Yeah.
It's not just, he's not paying lip service to it. He really is behind it. And he did spend Friday evening in a freezing cold tent.
It was cold.
Yeah. So he's definitely gone up in my estimation.
And Mr. David Croft.
Yes.
Because he really understands podcasting.
He did. Actually, he completely floored me when he first walked in, because he said, how are you guys doing? You've been doing a lot more podcasts lately. He's actually paying attention.
How does he know that?
I mean, it's okay, we're not being secretive about it, no. But I didn't expect him to be keeping an eye on it. And we were talking to him later in the evening, and he works in radio. And most people who work in radio, I get the impression that they're slightly fearful of podcasting as a medium. And not everybody really understands it, but he gets it. He really does get it. So definitely, he's gone well up in my estimation.
Seems like David Croft is good at remembering things, though, because he also asked me, you know, how I was, because he remembered that I made full use of the free bar last year.
He's got a memory on him.
Yeah.
He hasn't seen you for a year.
No.
And his one defining memory of you is bringing up an awful lot of free beer, which I don't know if we mentioned on the show last year.
No, nothing happened. It was fine. So anyway, Saturday was wet and cold, and we woke up very miserable because it had been a wet and cold night. No sleep.
Yeah. The tents, we were in a bread bin. We did a blog post about this, and if you've seen the blog post, you've seen the pictures, but we'll put a picture on the Enhanced podcast. It's a unique tent. It's made of cardboard. That's the first thing to say about it. It looks like a huge oversized bread bin. It's eco-friendly. MyHab make them, and they make sure that they get recycled and reused. Not the most hermetically sealed bubble in the world.
Yeah, the thing is, it's got an opening at either end, so there is a through draft.
Yeah, it's got two flat walls. So it's not like an igloo shape, and wind doesn't tend to be, it's not very aerodynamic, ironically. Two flat walls, two zips, and the wind screams through each of the zips and out the other end. And
well, I think screams through is a bit over the top, but
it was cold. It's like being in a wind tunnel. Yeah, and that's probably why you got sick.
When we woke up on Saturday morning, it was raining, and the shower block was possibly the other end of the field as far away as you could get. And we thought, you know what, we could just stay in our tent now and watch.
Because we have the Kangaroo TV.
Yeah, watch free practice on the telly. Kangaroo TV. But yeah, because it's worth driving all that way to Silverstone and then watch it on the telly. That's the kind
but
of people we
really
are.
We really did think about it.
But the Kangaroo TV doesn't work outside the circuit.
Is that a range?
We were quite disappointed.
Massively disappointed there. It means we had to get up and we had to trudge our way into the grandstands.
We went and sat at Luffield because it was covered. It was the nearest one to where we were.
It was one of the only covered ones, actually.
And it was raining. Still.
Yeah, on and off.
During free practice three, the little portable television did work inside the circuit.
Yeah, that's the non-touchscreen portable television, by the way.
Yeah, and they were broadcasting the Five Live coverage.
Mm, yeah.
So we got to listen to the coverage with Anthony Davidson, who we have already established is a genius.
Oh yes, as a commentator, he's wasted in a Formula One car.
And Lou gave us a shout out.
She did.
It was excellent. Now, unfortunately, we heard it, but we didn't get to record it or anything.
No, so. Normally I always record every Radio 5 Live session as well as every ITV session in order that we can listen back to it, and that's how we got the Morris Hamilton shout out a couple of weeks ago when Scott did his call in.
Yeah.
Missed this one, and it's not on iPlayer. And we can't get hold of it, otherwise we would play it now because it was a great shout out. And we do appreciate Lou calling in. However, it's lost. It's lost to the ether. And if anybody out there happens to have a copy of it, we'd love to hear it again.
Free Practice 3 wasn't that special, but of note, it was so windy that the marshals had to take down some of the advertising boards because it looked like they were going to blow over.
They did. And I think they were coming off of their hinges. They'd basically come away from their holdings. Was it three or four of them had to be pulled down and then hidden behind one of the barriers?
I wonder if they get a refund.
The advertisers?
Mm.
I have no idea. It's a good point. They didn't lose out that much. In fact, they probably got a little bit more airtime because there was about eight people walking across the track with their big sign saying Santander on it. And we're talking about it now.
One thing we did want to point out was Alianora's race comparator spreadsheet, which is in Dropio if you want to see it. It was unbelievably right.
She did a really good job of updating it after FP3.
Mm.
And it predicted that the front row in qualifying would be Heikki Kovalainen and Mark Webber.
What?
1-2. Who the hell would have predicted that?
I would have said you were crazy.
Yeah. I wouldn't have put money on it, even given that spreadsheet, even being that late in the day. And it was bang on, completely accurate.
So should we be using this for our fantasy races?
I think so. I think for the next race, we're going to be relying on this 100% thing.
We stayed at left field for qualifying, and watching it back on TV this week, the cameras were jumping all over the place. It was so windy. And we noticed Rosberg was really bouncing around that final corner.
He was. At one point, I thought there was something very wrong with the track because you could see noticeably his nose was sort of jumping as he went around the slow corners. It didn't get any better. It actually got worse. But it was only him who seemed to have the problem. So no doubt there was something very wrong with his car.
And it explains why he didn't get out of the first qualifying session.
And why he ended up behind Nakajima in qualifying.
Button had the same problem that he had last year.
Which
was... second year in a row.
Yeah.
His lap was screwed by yellow flags.
Phantom yellow flags, in fact, because if I recall last year, when going into qualifying, something happened just ahead of him and the guy got on the radio and said there's yellow flags at Brooklands. And by the time we got there,
they'd gone.
And this year, Fizzy spun off at Brooklands in front of him.
There's yellow flags ahead.
Yeah, by the time he got there,
they'd gone.
Yeah. He didn't make much mention of it this year round, but I'm pretty sure it's the same problem.
Right.
Twice.
On his last flying lap, Bourdais managed to get the fastest middle sector.
Yeah.
How cool is that?
He was doing really well, although it was down to the time that he went out. But it was a good little lap, and his car, both the Toro Rosso cars, were hooked up quite well around Silverstone.
Yeah, Vettel easily got through to quali 3, didn't he?
He was doing really well.
It was amazing.
Q2 didn't, an awful lot didn't happen in Q2.
Well, no, the only interesting things were Vettel and the fact that Ferrari were really struggling.
They sent both cars out again
to
do a final flying lap because they weren't confident they were going
to
get through.
Well, they had good reason not to be.
Yeah, and all they managed to make it in was, 6th and 8th?
Yeah.
They had serious problems. Would expect them to be much closer to McLaren than they were, and they didn't really have an answer.
In the third session, Kubica had an issue with the back of the car. He said it was a problem that he'd already experienced earlier in the weekend.
Yeah, we're not quite sure what's going on there, but they had the rear of the car off, and he didn't really get a chance to make an impression on Q3. Also, Massa ended up right at the back because he had a problem with the wheel nut when he came in for a pit stop, and that meant he didn't have enough time to do his final flying lap.
Hamilton was told not to overdrive the car in the third sector, and he did twice.
First time, right in front of us, actually, that bit. Yep. We did get a good view of that. He took too much speed into bridge and scrubbed most of it off on the gravel. Not good. Looked like he wasn't really handling that section of the track too well. Second time out, didn't look so bad, but he did lock up a front left tyre at the same section of the track. Lost him quite a bit of time compared to his teammate. And the result was the net result was a fourth place on the grid.
Webber had pole position briefly.
Wow, how exciting was that?
That was amazing, especially with Coulthard back in 11th.
Yeah, he did really well with that car.
That must be his best ever grid slot.
It probably is, yeah.
And Kovalainen got his best ever as well.
Because he got pole.
First pole position.
Very good. What a place to do it. And it was, yeah, it wasn't quite the right McLaren on pole for the fans.
No.
It wasn't the same atmosphere we experienced last year.
No, but I think everyone was still really happy just because it was so mixed up.
Yeah, it was a different front row and it was good to see.
After qualifying, Ron called Heikki fat. Basically.
You're paraphrasing there, but on the TV, he said that when he arrived at the team, he'd had too much coffee and cake.
He ate a lot of cake. How rude.
And yeah, so Ron took credit for the pole position by saying he was thinner, which he may well be. I don't know what the hell Renault are doing with their drivers if they're making them eat cake and coffee. I'm sure they're not really, but they're clearly not treating them right at all, are they?
Straight after qualifying, we met up with our first interviewee of the weekend.
We're here post-qualifying in the COPS E-Zone with Ian Lockwood from RacingBalls.net, and we're just listening to the beautiful sounds of GP2. However, qualifying is much more important as Webber is on the front row of the grid.
Yeah, it was a very good performance by Mark. I wasn't expecting him to get quite that high up. He's been fast all weekend throughout the three practice sessions, but I was still thinking probably sixth or seventh. So second's a very good result. Just hoping he gets off the line okay tomorrow.
I reckon that he's really light. What do you think, and how far do you think he's going to go in the race?
Yeah, he has had a couple of poor starts recently. I know last time out in France, there was they identified a problem on both Red Bull cars, actually, with contamination of the clutch. So hopefully they've managed to get that sorted out. Typically, they don't tend to fuel light at Red Bull. They tend to go quite a long way. So I'm hoping that they haven't changed strategy dramatically for this race. And hopefully it should be a good, strong, solid points finish for him.
Still, it was a really good performance from Webber, and he's managed to show up Coulthard at his last ever British GP. Do we think that Coulthard has a problem, or is it just the pressure?
I think there obviously is a lot of pressure, or maybe even overdriving from Coulthard today, wanting to do well in his last Grand Prix. But, you know, he's a veteran, and he should be able to handle that sort of thing. In the Silverstone test last week, he lost out a lot of time because of problems with the car. He's also lost time in free practice three today with little running, so I think that's probably had the ultimate effect on him today.
Do you have a theory at who might replace him next year?
Yeah, I think the hot money is probably on Vettel to come in and replace him. I wouldn't be entirely surprised if that happened at some point during the season, maybe a swap Vettel for Coulthard for a couple of races to, if Vettel is announced as a Red Bull driver, to get in the car and give him a bit of practice before the end of the season.
So moving away from qualifying, the shock news of this weekend is that Bernie has taken the British GP to Donington. As a veteran of Silverstone, what do you think about this?
I think it's a shame, really. I've been coming to Silverstone for it's my fifth year here now. I think from a fan's point of view, the circuit's got everything you need. The sort of the toilet facilities, food, catering, general layout of the circuit is a lot better than any other circuit I've been to, from Spa, Spain, Hungary. The infrastructure is pretty much here. You know, got the new road put in, and I don't really see how Donington's going to have to get to the standard of Silverstone in 2 years' time.
Well, we've been to Donington, and it's definitely not ready to host a Formula One race. So, I mean, it's probably not going to happen as soon as they think. So do you think the BRDC would take a deal where they got to keep it for a couple of extra years?
Quite possibly, because in Formula One, you obviously never know what's going to happen. And it could well be that this is just a negotiating tactic by Bernie anyway. Damon Hill was speaking from here yesterday, said they were going to go ahead with the development work on the track regardless. So I think if the option came up, then they'd keep it going for as long as they can.
So we'll have to enjoy it while we can. It looks like we're in for a cracker of a race tomorrow. What are your predictions? And more importantly, do you think it's going to rain?
I haven't seen the weather forecast. From a camper's point of view, I hope it doesn't rain, but it will certainly spice up the race a bit. I think probably definitely a McLaren win. Ferrari seems to be struggling a bit. It would be nice to see Kovalainen be the 100th ever winner of a Grand Prix. I would say probably, I don't know, Massa in third, and I don't know about second. I would hope, like to see Webber retaining his second place, but that's probably a little bit hopeful.
You're getting quite good at those interview things, aren't you?
Really? It's only my second one.
Well, it's not so bad. Ian was a lovely guy, wasn't he?
Absolutely.
Really nice. He bought us a beer.
He did.
Which is always going to win his favour.
Yeah.
Let's be honest with you. It's always going to make for a good interview. I think he's a very lovely chap, and it was good to meet up with him.
So then it was time for a quiz in the big Honda Dome. I don't know how to explain it. It was a big inflatable bubble.
Dome, I thought you were going to say then.
Yeah.
Just a big dome.
Big dome.
No other way of explaining it. Like a gigantic bouncy castle with a roof.
It was kind of like an upside down bouncy castle.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
Branded with the Earth Dreams stuff. It had five big screens inside, like a mini cinema.
Yep.
And they were basically showing a film of Honda propaganda.
Yeah, it kind of is.
Not in a bad way.
Described by Nick Fry as a prototype one, So I think they're going to do more with it. Just a 20-minute film about what they're doing with the Earth Dreams concept this year. There was also a car you could have a look around.
Yeah, it was a mishmash of like various years.
Yeah, yeah.
Wasn't this year's car anyway.
No, and also there was a section where you could buy some of the partners' merchandise. So it was like an all-encompassing Earth Dreams experience.
Yeah, I liked this bit actually best almost of the whole weekend because,
really?
Well, the thing is, during the day, I assume that anyone can go in there and watch the film.
It was popular. There was a lot of queuing outside that thing.
But this time it was roped off and there was lots of people outside because they wanted to see Jensen. And we got to just like wave our Dreamfields badges and stroll in. It was really good. I felt like a proper celebrity.
Oh, you let us shout it live, haven't
you?
Yeah,
I know. However, my elation was short-lived when it turns out...
Yeah, we don't want to talk about this.
It turns that my camera didn't have a battery in it. Now, why would my camera not have a battery in it?
I am just as upset about this as you, if not more so. And I'm sure Lou...
She's never going to forgive you.
Forgive me, because she left a comment on Friday saying, I hope you guys have a good time. Just if you see Jensen, just take a picture.
Yep.
Between talking to Ian and going to the Earth Dreams bubble, I thought it would be wise to charge my battery.
So we could take lots of pictures.
And then I didn't bring the battery with me. And I didn't realise. The thing is, I didn't realise until I took the camera out of the bag, walked up to Jensen button, took the lens cap off, which is rare for me, pressed the button and nothing happened. And I turned it on and I looked at it and I looked confused. And then I popped open the battery and the sorry truth dawned on me that the battery...
Did you get that sinking feeling in your stomach?
It was a good half a mile, the battery was from the camera. And so no pictures of the Jensen button Rubens Barrichello pub quiz.
I may have been able to get some video, but I don't know what it looks like yet.
We haven't looked at it yet. And you might have saved my skin.
Mm.
And I'm very sorry to everybody who wanted to see a picture
You've
of Jensen.
Let everybody and yourself down.
I know.
Anyway, so Jensen and Barrichello were taking part in a mock-up of A Question of Sport, hosted by David Croft and cleverly entitled A Question of Motorsport.
See what they did there.
Yeah. They had some people on their teams like motorcyclists and touring car people.
You don't know who they are.
I don't know. They were very nice, but I don't know this stuff.
It's Honda personnel. There was Gordon Shedden. Was the only name I recognised that wasn't Rubens, Jensen or David.
Anyway, they were quite funny and it was good. And we have no pictures.
No, I thought Jensen Button was a cheating little swine. Let's not beat around
the bush.
It was
all fun. It was fun.
Maybe I'm taking it too seriously, but Rubens Barrichello aced that quiz. And Jensen asked every member of his family. He asked his PA. And then when nobody could answer the question, he just simply incremented his own score. The end of the quiz.
It was a draw in the end.
It was
supposed to be a draw.
It was nowhere near a draw. It was about 17-3. Nothing like a draw. He was useless.
Well, we did find out two important things, though.
Yeah.
Rubens is very funny.
He has a very nice, dry
sense of humour.
Yeah, I like him.
And also, Jensen recognises his dad from his dad's breathing.
They did that thing, the blindfold.
He said, well, guess who this is?
Yeah.
But Jensen put the blindfold on and said, yeah, I don't even need to. I know who this is. I know who it is. I can tell from his breathing, which is just weird.
I wouldn't be surprised if he couldn't have told from his aftershave, because that would have been quite strong. But I know what you're saying. That was one of his only points as well.
Yeah,
the
actual point that he got right.
It was good and it was different. I sort of wish we could have partaken in the quiz, though. We were just an audience.
Partaken?
Yeah. Is that not the word?
I don't know.
We were just an audience, passive audience members, and it would have been nice to be
involved. I think, but the problem is because we missed out on the actual pub quiz, and I think that was more interactive.
That's true. That wasn't with Jensen, though.
No. Next, we went back to recover the battery. And
it was where I left it.
Yeah. And we found Murray Walker doing his 5 Live 606 questiony.
By the way, there's a certain amount of irony in that battery because of the grief I gave you. Did we mention on the podcast when we turned up at Autosport this year, and you charged the wrong battery, and therefore I had about an hour's worth of photography, and didn't, you know, and gave you a lot of grief for the fact that I couldn't use a flash the whole of the Autosport event, and then I ruined this one.
Yeah.
I do apologise. But yeah, Murray Walker was recording 606 Live.
So we stayed to listen, and it was excellent, as Murray Walker always is, and afterwards, he shook our hands. It was brilliant.
Yes.
Well, the thing is, he turned to everyone that had been in the room the whole time.
When he walked in.
Nice to meet you. Yeah. Hi. And then he got to us. He was like, It's like, there's extra people here. That's odd. But he shook our hands and went on. It was good.
Very nice chap.
Saturday night was about more free beer, and actually not just beer, but some kind of weird cocktail with strawberries in it.
Which you didn't know we're doing.
No,
you
I didn't.
You live, you learn.
I don't want to give David Croft anything else to remember.
Right.
We also had another person go up in our estimation.
Mm.
So two on Friday and one on Saturday.
Yep.
This time, Henry Hope Frost.
Yes.
From Autosport. Now, we saw him at Autosport International on stage doing some interviews, and I don't think it was really his fault, but he didn't really come across that well.
No.
And isn't he on the Autosport podcast?
To be honest with you, I'm quite critical of the Autosport podcast. It's a bit dull. It's long-winded. It's intermittent. It's hard work to listen to. And I don't think his true persona, having met him, comes across on a podcast at all, because he is hilarious.
He's really funny.
He had us entertained for hours and hours and hours. At one point, I was kind of wishing he'd go to bed just so that we didn't miss out on any more humour, because I was so tired I just had to sleep.
The thing is, in the tents, we got given these ridiculously small pillows, which he named tea bags, and they were just like that, basically. But the thing is, he moaned about these pillows for like half an hour straight,
yes.
But everything he said was ridiculously funny.
If I was in charge of the Autosport podcast, I'd rewrite the whole thing around Henry Hope Frost. I'd give him a load of strawberry cocktails.
Just let him talk,
and it'll be the best Formula One podcast out there.
Sunday morning, my sore throat began.
Didn't I know it? You always ruin our events, and yet there's always something that brings it down. This time you were a bit ill.
A bit ill?
Well, last time, obviously, hangover. This year, some kind of flu thing.
That's sympathy for you, isn't it?
Well.
In the morning, we went for a pit lane walk, because last year I missed out because you went off without me.
There was only one space. I did. Okay. Yeah. You missed out.
Yeah. So this year I was on the list too. We went across the Manky Bridge.
Still Manky.
It's held together with gaffer tape.
Yeah.
We walked.
Don't show Bernie. He knows already, doesn't he?
He must do.
Let's not try and pull the wool over his eyes anymore.
We walked through the paddock and saw Gordon Ramsay. Now I'm just name dropping. You know how it is.
Right.
Gordon Ramsay was there, you know.
Yeah.
And he was interviewed on ITV later, wasn't he?
He was, with Davina McCall, which I thought was a bit weird, because Davina McCall started out as Formula One pit lane reporter for MTV, yet she seemed to act as if it was her first race.
I think she was just excitable and just didn't mention it.
But she was talking to Louise Goodman. You'd have thought she'd have said, like, how's things changed? I remember when I was here once before. I've been here before in the pit lane. This used to be much anything, not just like, I'm having a really good time and aren't the engines loud? I mean, what did she listen to when she was there before? I don't get it.
We didn't actually see Davina though, which sounds like probably a good thing.
I might have had some choice words.
Yeah. We went into the Honda garage where we asked lots of questions and saw a man get really angry. Because at the time, there was a
sports car race
going on. And I found it really odd because suddenly there was all this shouting and his car bombed it into the pit lane right in front of us. Because they have their sort of pit.
They set up in front of the Formula One garage just temporarily. Yep.
And the driver got out of the car and started effing and blinding and swearing, and he stormed over to the pit wall.
He threw his gloves down.
He was having a real fit. It was really quite exciting.
It was basic. Well, it's only a Porsche Super Cup. Let's be honest. It wasn't worth getting that irate about.
He was really angry.
Who cares? Let's be honest with you. Who was actually watching the race? Who cared what he was? He took it far too seriously for my liking. It was fun though. We were in the right place at the right time there.
We got to take some pictures and you asked a few questions, didn't you?
I was poking my nose in. Yeah. I tell you what I did find quite interesting was the little air hole on the nose, which occasionally keeps drivers cool in the hot conditions. Honda have got
don't need that in Britain.
No.
It was cold enough.
Yeah. Well, the Honda have got a neat little solution whereby they put a little plastic cover over it. So you can't tell from looking at it, unless you're really close, whether or not it's enclosed or open.
Oh, it's see-through, you mean?
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So as far as anybody could tell, they were running with the open nose. But in fact, it was completely sealed and all airflow was going around and not going anywhere near the driver.
Do you think that makes a lot of difference whether people can tell or not?
No.
No.
I was quite impressed, though. And they have these tiny little stickers that go over the bolts on the adjustable front wing, the little slots. They have these tiny little stickers, which they didn't have last year. And that's just aids a tiny little bit more aerodynamic efficiency, I noticed.
That's too much detail. Also, I want to know why Alistair Weaver was there on our pit lane walk.
Alistair Weaver, he of Honda Racing TV, presents numerous videos for the website, often weekly.
Sometimes in the garage.
Race previews, why would you give him a pit lane walk.
Think that he'd seen it before.
It's almost like giving Louise Goodman pit lane tour.
Yeah.
Come have a look around her garage. You only do it every other day.
Come and look at the paddock. Brilliant.
I can only guess that he wanted to take his partner around. It's the only thing that possibly makes sense. Otherwise, I just cannot, my brain cannot cope with what he was doing there. Lovely guy.
Mm.
Very tall chap.
And feasibly tall.
Yeah.
Really.
But what he wanted a pit lane tour. It's like his day job.
Yeah.
What's he doing?
Bless. On the way back, we saw Mark Blundell and Steve Ryder doing a bit to camera.
Yeah.
Now, I'm assuming it was a practice because we didn't see anything like that on the actual show.
No.
And it was a couple of hours earlier.
Yes.
They were huddled in a corner because, guess what, it was raining.
It was absolutely hammering down again. All up here, I was quite disappointed in our pit lane photographs because last year, I think the photograph, our most ripped off photograph of all time, in fact, was the photograph we took of the McLaren motorhome next to the Ferrari motorhome.
Yes.
And I was hoping to get another picture that more people could steal from us. But it was just such bad weather. None of them, it was all dreary and overcast and like, you were in the pit lane, but it was miserable.
Last time you got a nice picture of Louise Goodman bathed in sunlight. Nothing. Just Mark Blundell cowering in a corner under an umbrella. Afterwards, it was time to get ready for the race, so we wandered to our seat at Maggots and Beckett's. We missed the driver's parade, but you couldn't see anything anyway.
It's disappointing, isn't it?
They were all huddled up because it was too cold.
It's almost patronising, the driver's parade. I don't approve of it at all. It hasn't got any better since last year, and they must be able to come up with something better than a bunch of guys on the back of a flatbed truck.
I had to send you back to the tent for the Kangaroo TV.
I'm not excelling myself
Mr.
this weekend.
Mr. Forgetful.
It's lucky I remembered to come back at all.
Actually, the problem was we weren't prepared, were we?
No.
So we rushed out to our pit lane thing and then we were like, oh, the race is about to start.
Yeah.
That's a shame.
So, no, I did. I wandered off. And all I missed in that time, to be honest with you, I saw the red hours better than you did because you were undercover.
So unfair. They only did half a show and they did it behind my head.
Yeah.
I couldn't see anything.
I had quite a good view of them, actually. So that was good timing. But I missed the Stig. Because the Stig was out on the track.
Yeah.
Top Gear Stig.
I'll tell you what, I saw the Stig, but I didn't know it was the Stig. Because you had the Kangaroo TV with the radio on it.
I told you. So you don't know if it was any good or not. You weren't paying any attention.
Well, I saw the car go past. It didn't go off the track.
Did you not recognise the white helmet?
I didn't see the white helmet. I saw a red car. I was actually too busy, seriously, being cold. I know I've been complaining about the rain and cold this whole show.
Right.
But I have never...
You know you live in Britain.
Yeah, I do. But I have never been... so cold in my whole life as I was sat in that grandstand waiting for you to come back.
Yeah. It's a bit raised. And it's an airfield.
Yeah.
So there's no defences against the wind. And you're maybe, what, 1.5 people high off the ground.
Yeah.
And so you caught the brunt of the wind because you were right at the front. We had really good seats. Really, really good seats. Which meant you were the first person to really get caught by that wind.
I was like the windbreaker for everyone
else. You were a gigantic windbreaker.
Not a gigantic one.
A small windbreaker.
Shut up. We haven't really mentioned it, but we were managing to keep in touch with the site and all our live commenting and stuff.
Yes, we had 3G laptop.
And on my mobile.
3G mobile, texting and that. And yep, we got some predictions.
Scott, Stephen and Rich had Lewis for the win. Galti had a lot of faith in Webber, thinking that he might take the win. Rocket and you had Kovalainen up there.
Misplaced faith there.
Yeah, and Lou and Dom had Kimi.
You didn't have the courage to put your name to anyone.
Well, no, actually, when we were listening to Murray Walker, someone asked him for his predictions, and he said, I refuse to put my name to any of the drivers. So that's what I'm going to say.
You're not Murray Walker.
Yeah, but I'm going to say it because Murray said it.
He can only say that because he's been doing it for years and years and years, and he is a credible name in the sport.
I've been doing it for a year.
in a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so you abstained for this one.
Yeah,
I won't let you get away with it next time.
Anything can happen. I don't want to put my name to these drivers. That's what he said.
Everybody started on Inters, didn't they?
Yeah. It was a bad choice for Webber.
Oh, disappointed.
He made like 4 corners before he spun.
Yeah, first go to spin out. He would have done better, obviously, in hindsight on the extreme wets. It wouldn't have done him any good, I guess, because he would have had to pit almost immediately. But still, that was frightening.
4 corners in.
Yeah.
Spin round.
Facing the wrong way.
All these cars coming at you in and they can't see anything.
No.
There was no visibility.
Driving into the spray and you've just got to sit there and just watch him come towards you. And just, do you think he had his eyes closed?
I would have. Oh my gosh. I'd
love to have seen his eyes then. Just held your breath and just prayed, I think, at that point.
Thankfully, nothing happened though. There was no safety car at the start or at all during the race.
No. You'd have put good money on there being some kind of safety car. It didn't look like it needed to start behind one. But at some point, there must have been carnage that would require the thing to be seen.
Rosberg started from the pit lane, having had the back of his car rebuilt.
Yeah, well, they needed to do that. He couldn't have possibly driven the whole race with his car bunny hopping around like it was. Hopefully, well, by the look of it, they did manage to fix what the major problem. And he looked okay. Not great throughout the race, but he reasonable.
Massa also spun before the first lap was over. But, you know, that set the tone for the whole day, really.
What, Massa facing the wrong way?
Yeah. Well, sometimes spinning all the way around and facing the right way again.
Spinning and then just driving backwards.
Yep.
All sorts of things. You don't want to be too... I mean, everybody's been harsh on the guy. Let's give him a little bit of a break. But we bigged him up at the last race, and he won it. And maybe we put a little bit too much faith in the guy. The Ferrari never, ever looked stable around that track, did it?
Well, the thing is, Ferrari clearly had a problem on this racetrack because neither of them were doing very well.
In the wet.
Yeah. And they weren't fast, and you've got to say, by about the third spin,
yes,
there's something seriously wrong.
I would, if I was Massa, I'd have packed up.
Even Massa doesn't spin that many times.
No, no. And to be honest with you, I'm not entirely sure if it's not anything to do with the holy nose, because it's clearly designed to work at a certain speed. We know it likes long, flowing, sweeping corners. Presumably, once the pace drops off, as you get with wet tyres and inter tyres, maybe it causes more problems, a lack of front downforce, or maybe water just gets into the nose and gets caught up in there, and it just causes some problems, because it didn't look well at all. At only one point, when Kimi was catching Hamilton on a drying track before the first stops, did that car look fast. The rest of the time, it just looked like an absolute handful.
Do you think that they would have noticed that before, though? Because, I mean, it's been wet. It wasn't wet on Friday, but it was wet on Saturday, and they had a chance to change it.
Possibly. Don't know. It wasn't as wet, was it?
Maybe they didn't bring any non-holy noses.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm maybe just grasping straws. Maybe it's nothing to do with that at all, but it just didn't look happy. It didn't look as hooked up as the McLarens or the BMWs.
Piquet got past Alonso at the start.
Alonso had a terrible start. Another poor start from Alonso.
They did switch back again.
Before the first lap or the second lap? Very, very early on. Yeah.
Coulthard took out Vettel. Yeah. The end of his last British GP. It was rubbish.
That sums up his career.
Yeah.
Not to be
disappointing.
Not to be harsh. Don't tell me. Let me guess. He went for a gap, and the gap closed up before he got there.
Something like that. Yeah. Sutil's accident was, well, not hilarious, but it was just funny because
frightening.
Yeah, because he jackknifed in front of Bourdais.
Mm.
And just missed him.
Yeah.
Bounced across the grass and then just missed him again.
Yeah. Yeah, somehow he managed to go faster, I guess because Bourdais was slowing down. He managed to go faster on the grass backwards and up in the air than Bourdais did, taking the corner correctly.
That doesn't say a lot for Bourdais, really,
does it? He didn't do too bad. He didn't. It wasn't a great... I mean, he was spinning a couple of times. Did they race
Champ? Who wasn't?
Hamilton.
Yeah.
That would be it, I should think. Yeah. Nick didn't spin, did he? Don't think I saw Nick spinning. I might have missed that one. It's hard to keep track. But yeah, Hamilton was the only guy. He made one tiny mistake when he went off the road. But he kept it in the straight line, kept pointing in the right direction, and saved it nicely.
Well, Hamilton was on form right from the start.
Yes.
Took a couple of cars, ended up behind his teammate.
While they touched, it was close. Yes, could have been an entirely different race if that was a slightly rougher touch. But he did. Hamilton did back off just a tiny bit and let Heike grab his... get his composure again.
Yeah.
But then
it was only for a few laps, and then
From where we were saying, it always looked like it was inevitable, didn't it?
Yeah. The thing is, I mean, some people were saying that it may have been team orders, but to be honest,
it wouldn't make a difference.
Even if it was, Hamilton was going to get past.
Yeah.
Because he was so fast.
And once he got past, I mean, look, he never looked back, did he? That's the thing. And Heike spun almost immediately afterwards. And he didn't really have that car hooked up. He wasn't anywhere near as good in the wet as he was the day before. And Lewis had the measure of him.
Renault and BMW both said that rain was coming.
This is before the first stops.
Yeah.
More rain on the way.
Yeah. But Alonso, Webber and Kimi all decided the best thing to do was to stick on their old inters.
Destroyed their race strategy.
Well, the first thing I don't understand, why does anyone ever stay on old tyres?
Yeah, Alonso did it before, didn't he? Oh, don't ask me when.
When?
Somebody will tell us in the comments when it was. I forget. Alonso stayed on the inters.
How is that ever helpful?
Because on a drying track, you've got more rubber and therefore you'll get more heat into the tyres and they'll work better with less tread. They work essentially like a slick. I cannot for the life of me remember when, but I guess Alonso had that in his mind when he thought, well, if there's no more rain, that's the right choice, and they would have been in the box seat.
It worked for him before, but...
Yeah, the inter tyres would have got hot and you'd have to come back and change. But given that everybody, including us, could see that more rain was coming on along the horizon, and it was so windy, and eventually some more rain would be on the track, it seemed like a really stupid decision.
So is the problem that they were old tyres or that they were inters?
They were old inters, so there was no tread.
Both.
Well, they couldn't disperse the water. When the rain comes down, it doesn't get rid of it. There's no groove to send the water anywhere else, so you have no grip. The temperature drops on them, and then you get slower, and then because the temperature's dropped, you're going slower, and then it gets more slippery, and then eventually you're basically driving a boat.
During the first round of pit stops, we kind of lost the plot.
We did. Yeah. Sat in the grandstands.
Yeah.
Even with the kangaroo TV.
I think that I could tell where people were in relation to other people,
yeah,
but I didn't ever know why.
No. At some point, we lost Jensen Button and we didn't even notice.
No. Well, the thing
In fact, we didn't even notice until we'd walked back to the main section of the track, like well after the race would finish. Where was Jensen? He's gone.
The thing is, I kept seeing Barrichello and I thought, oh, I'll spot Jensen in a minute and then I would forget. And then I'd see Barrichello and go, oh, that's funny. Where's Jensen? And then I would forget.
Yeah, so it is really hard to keep track. So after the first pit stops, you're just about okay. And then after that, all chaos reigns.
McLaren's weather information is infallible.
Always, always. They should be providing information to the Met Office, not the other way around.
Really,
because it's absolutely, just whatever they do, everyone should just copy them. Put more fuel in the McLaren on a dodgy weather day. Go for more fuel, see what they do, and just do what they do. And you're not going to go wrong.
Talking of fuel, Weber wasn't light, was he?
No, you said he was in your interview.
Yeah, in my interview, I thought he might be light, but...
No, what was it, lap 18 did you finish on?
Something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, pitted on lap 18. That's pretty damn good for second place on the grid.
Nick Heidfeld really likes that Luffield complex, doesn't he?
Because...
Well, twice he overtook two cars at the same time, if you know what I mean.
At the same corner, if you can consider that section one corner.
Yeah.
He went on the outside of Glock and then cut on the inside of Alonso.
Mm-hmm.
And then not so many laps later, he came across...
Kovalainen and Raikkonen.
Yes, and did basically the same manoeuvre.
Yeah.
And also, simultaneously managed to ruin Kimi's pit stop strategy because he blocked the pit entrance.
Yeah, it did look that way.
I don't know whether he was meant to come in or not, but if he was planning to come in, there was no way he was going to make it that lap.
It did kind of look he was headed that way, and then he couldn't because there was a car in the way.
It was a BMW just scything its way through. So 10 out of 10, overtaking, well, which one of the two, really? Both of them overtaking manoeuvres of the race.
Yeah, I'd say that aside from Lewis, he was probably the best wet weather driver out there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that was... Got to give credit to Nick. He did really well. I don't remember him facing the wrong direction. He must have got something wrong, but... No, I think all in all, he did very well. Unlike Jensen.
Yeah, you've got a thing about Jensen now, haven't you?
People keep telling me that he's a great wet weather driver, from the highest to commentators to the lowest.
Mm-hmm.
He basically, everybody seems to rate him in the wet.
Yep.
Yet I don't remember him having a good race in the wet for a very long time. It wasn't very good, Silverstone, like we said. He went off on the extreme wet tyres. I mean, how do you manage that, really? I mean, people were flying off the road of the inters when they were warm.
Which is understandable.
But on a new set of extreme weather tyres, that seems a little bit odd. He didn't do well in Monaco. He crashed on the first lap.
Yep.
Fuji? Nope. There was Nürburgring. He had one really good lap.
Yes.
Until he binned it.
You might have a point.
I don't know why people rate him so much in the wet. It really wasn't that great. It wasn't a stellar drive from the guy. And Rubens put him to shame.
He really did.
Even though Rubens had a faulty fuel stop, that was a great drive from him.
Yeah.
I mean, on those extreme wet tyres, he was absolutely untouchable. Really, really good decision to go to them. That was his decision to go to those tyres. And all credit to him. Experience to the fore.
Kimi got another fastest lap of the race, didn't he?
Boy's doing well.
Yeah.
Well,
six in a row now.
Six in a row.
Mm.
That's looking good now. Yep. One more, isn't it?
I think he's equaled the record now.
Has he? One more and he'll get it. That is incredible.
Especially considering the race that the Ferraris were having.
Yeah. Yeah, and considering last time his exhaust pipe fell off as well. So it's doing, obviously he's got some things he's doing right, but spinning twice.
Not so much.
Not so good. He almost took the fight to Hamilton, but then made the wrong decision. The pit stop screwed everything else and barely salvaged a bit of respect when he managed to pass Alonso in the closing stages.
And on the last lap, Nakajima lost a place, didn't he?
Yeah, that's a bit of a shame. Gutting. I think he might have been on the extreme wets, and I think he might have burnt them.
Mm.
They might have died at that point, and therefore he lost a place to Trulli, which is a bit of a shame, because he's having a good race, and now he's on the same point as Rosberg.
So Hamilton won, and it was an incredible drive.
It's exactly the result the British crowd were looking for,
yeah.
Wasn't it? Unexpected, given his poor qualifying. And he did look ragged in qualifying.
Yeah, it wasn't looking good.
Peerless in that race by how many seconds? Unbelievable amount of gap.
Over a minute.
Yeah, which is just unheard of in this day and age of racing. And you can't fault it. It's just unbelievable performance.
The thing is, every lap was just like perfect. Yeah. I mean, obviously we could only see one bit of it. And I think he went off.
I mean, his luck was in, no question, because the first corner could have gone wrong.
Yeah.
At one point, Sutil binned it in front of us.
Yeah. And a hair ran near him.
A hair ran out in front of him. So a lot of things out of his control could have gone wrong, and they didn't. But everything that was in his control, he didn't mess up at all.
Considering the amount of people that spun at some point, and he didn't. He just kept it in a straight line.
He did, and the car was hooked up well. He put his teammate to shame. I'm really disappointed in Heike. Not as disappointed as I am in Massa, but Heike didn't really have much to show for his Saturday's efforts. And really, hats off to the guy. Unbelievable.
I tell you what, though, the cheering in the crowd was actually a bit of an anticlimax because they started cheering like five laps from the end.
Yeah.
And the air horns were going off, and every lap he came round. And it was like, ooh, he's done it. And it's like, well, he hasn't done it quite yet. And then when he had actually done it, it was like, oh, but you've already been cheering. It's done.
The air horns have run out of air.
Yeah.
Which is a bit of a shame.
Although I did say we were keeping up with live commenting.
Yeah.
During the race, probably not so much because it was so exciting.
Yeah, well, there was too many comments, actually. That's what happened. They broke our 3G connection.
That's right. At the end, I was trying to comment on my mobile. It said, this page is too big to load. Damn. We've got too many people.
Yeah, it was very good. And much credit and much thanks to everybody who commented on the site whilst we weren't there and kept us informed of all the things we're missing out on. We tried our best to keep up.
I think we did all right.
I think we did quite well, actually.
Considering we were in the middle of a field most of the time.
Podcasting from the middle of a field, that was quite a challenge.
Yeah.
But we did well. So
thanks to your mother.
Yes.
My mother-in-law. I almost said your mother-in-law then. That's wrong. For keeping it as well.
Yeah.
Apparently, they want us to go away more often because it was a great race when she was in charge.
Too tired. Ain't gonna.
No.
So we're here post-race and we're right by a grandstand because we're with Sean from Sean's Bista Info blog and he actually works on security for the grandstand. So how's your day been?
Well, the day's gone pretty smoothly. We got everyone in that should get in with their tickets. There wasn't a lot of trouble, a little bit of confusion. Some people had tickets for what's known as Pitt Straight Terrace, and we're on the Pitt Straight grandstand. But we have to use a lot of decorum and do a bit of a PR job with them, and they're all happy, basically.
So you got everyone sorted. That's the main thing. Did you enjoy the race?
I absolutely love the race. I was sat in the crowd. We managed to get a seat. I have to admit, I am a Lewis Hamilton fan, so the result was brilliant. And the crowd, the atmosphere in there was incredible. You know, everyone cheering. Normally, I'll just stay for the start and a couple of laps. Stayed for more or less the whole race this time. Fantastic.
This is potentially the penultimate British GP here at Silverstone. So as someone who works here, how are you feeling about that?
Well, I've been lucky enough to do this for 7 years now. If next year is our last year, to be honest, I'll be happy with that. As far as Donington's concerned, it'd be great to see the British Grand Prix at another circuit, and I'll be watching on my television with a cold beer, just like everyone else.
There seems to be a general feeling of unrest among the people that were standing in the rain, like Silverstone wasn't really prepared for bad weather.
Well, absolutely, and I don't blame them, because they've paid £140 for their tickets. They come up here, some of them have actually been misled into thinking they might have seats in the terraces. We've had a lot of people asking us about where do we go with general admission tickets. And all we can say is everywhere except the grandstands, you have to stand on the raised bits. Well, where are they? Well, those bits of grass over there, things like that. And we've even had people in wheelchairs who go to the wheelchair stands and can't see the track, which is absolutely abominable.
Well, seeing as the gloves are off, and Sean's brought up the subject, it is a stinking place of a racetrack. When it's wet and when it's cold and when it's muddy, it's a horrible place for spectators. So much is uncovered grandstand. So much is standing against a catch fence and peering through under an umbrella. Nothing to shout about in terms of grandstands or in terms of fan access or anything really good to say about Silverstone. I'm so glad, but in some ways.
I don't know what other tracks are like.
Well, it's hard to compare, but to have your main grandstand uncovered is unforgivable in this day and age. Unforgivable in Britain with our weather. To have, you know, the main opposite the pit straight, where opposite the garages, underneath the commentary boxes, no roof. And it shouldn't be like that. It should be covered. It should be like Barcelona, which is just end-to-end covered grandstands. And people deserve better than what Silverstone's offering. And I hope that Donington will give the English fans something more.
So your security on quite a prominent grandstand. You get to see a lot of famous people.
Oh, absolutely. We've got the media compound right behind us. So, of course, we see all of the ITV crew coming in and out. In previous years, we've seen Murray Walker. We regularly see James Allen and Martin Brundle. And, of course, years ago when they would interview big celebrities, we've seen a few of them, including Arnold Schwarzenegger and Kylie Minogue.
So now that the Grand Prix is actually finished, what's the rest of your job entail?
Well, it doesn't really entail a lot. To sort of fulfill the contract for the company I work for, we have to hang around until the final, I think it's a classic race out there, until that's over. And then we get the nod to go home then, basically. And that's it for another year.
Many thanks to Sean there. Always good to get a different perspective. He's right. That is it for another year. However, the championship is really getting going now, isn't it?
Oh, it's ridiculous. Three drivers at this stage in the championship. There are three drivers with the same amount of
all
points.
All on equal points.
Crazy.
Can't knock that at
and
all.
And Kubica is just there.
Yes.
He's got like 2 points less.
Absolutely. It's a four-way fight. No question. Halfway through the year, what more could one ask?
Weren't you a little bit upset with the Kangaroo TV though?
Well, a little bit.
It has this prediction thing,
which
is new.
Call me pedantic.
Yeah, I do.
Because
often.
You like Kangaroo TV a lot, but it does. It has a new screen, which you didn't have last year, which is championship predictions at this point during the race.
Yeah.
And if the race finished right here and right now, wherever you happen to be at the time, this is how the championship standings will be. And it was wrong.
Well, it had the fact that everyone would be on 48 points, but it didn't seem to count the fact that Hamilton would be ahead
because
he had that win.
Yeah, he was obviously first in order to get the equal amount of points as everybody else. It didn't include his win, and therefore it put Massa at the top. And that, it was given us, it's a statistic page, and it was giving us the wrong information. That's bad programming.
Yeah.
And for, what was it, £60 a weekend, I expect better programming.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying. You don't have to agree with me.
No, I do, but it was just the one page, and therefore I will let it go. At the other end of the championship, Barrichello now has 11 points, which is great. Button has 3.
Yeah, only 2 point scoring drivers behind him.
Yeah.
One of which, Nelson Piquet, we don't even think is going to see at the end of the season.
Yeah. And Bourdais.
And Bourdais is not having a stellar time. Obviously, both Force India drivers yet to score. But it's pretty lowly for Button.
It's not looking good, is it? On 5 Live, they interviewed him and asked about his future, and he just gave a nervous laugh.
He doesn't know.
No.
He can't answer that question. He doesn't have a contract for next year.
No.
And he doesn't know if he's going to get one. Do you think he's going to get one?
Well, I mean, I can't see why Honda wouldn't want him.
No, he has Nick Frye's absolute support.
Although now you've pointed out that he may not be the stellar wet driver that we thought.
It's just because the car's not great. Whenever you get the chance of a wet race, you have to make the most of it.
Yeah.
And when was the last time you made the most of it?
No, that's a good point. And like you said, he has the support of Nick Frye, but does he have the support of Ross Brawn?
Well, that's true. You need the support of Ross Brawn on your side. I mean, look at what he did. When he was in Ferrari, they wouldn't have made the strategy calls that they made today.
No, I mean, look what happened today. There was a top-running car, and they ruined their whole race.
Yeah, but there was a back-running car, and he hauled it all the way up to the front. What a difference a Brawn makes.
After we had a chat with Sean, we managed to find Dan Cross, who you might know from the comments, and his partner Elaine. I asked them how they wanted to be introduced, and Dan said Elaine was actually a lady because he bought her a stretch of land in Scotland, hence how she is introduced in this interview.
Right, we have returned to the E-Zone post-race and we're here with Lady Elaine Scott and Dan, who is Dan Cross. You might know him from the Facebook group. They've just enjoyed the race, although Dan's not quite happy with Weber.
Just a little bit gutted, actually. I was hoping for better things from second as well. I think he, well, from what I read on Autosport, he basically bombed out on Beckett's. Obviously, water on the track and the white lines is just absolutely gutted. But he did have good pace during the race. Made his way up there and then spun out again, I believe, before he got to the pit straight, about three quarters away from the race. So, yeah, a bit disappointing, really.
And also Coulthard on his last ever British GP. He didn't fare well either.
No, I guess he wanted to go out on a bit of a better sort of result than that. But there's a lot of support here today. Saw a load of Scottish flags up there, a lot of support for DC, and I'm sure he'll be missed.
Yeah, we heard a lot of cheers for Coulthard, Button and Hamilton in our grandstand. How did you find watching the race without being able to see all of the track?
Well, we were sat in Copse B and got to, well, in sort of one turn really, a lot of McLaren supporters there because we're obviously in the Vodafone sponsored grandstand. In some respects, looking on the old Kangaroo TV as well, we did see a lot of the action going around the club in Stowe. It was good in the way though, because you obviously got to see the grid, you got to see them start and finish there, but I don't know, preferred to see more of the turns and more of the action going on at the other end of the circuit.
The Kangaroo TV is definitely worth every penny. We found it a bit of a lifesaver. What did you think of it?
I have to agree, absolutely godsend. Otherwise, you have the commentary over the tannoys, but you only get to hear half of that when the cars are going around anyway. But pick your favourite drivers, you know what they're doing. You probably know more than what you do sitting at home, to be honest. I did find a lot of the people sat around us were peering over, having a good look. Should have probably charged them a couple of pennies or two. The only thing I probably would improve, and I can see from their perspective how they make money, is if you could plug in two headsets to actually listen to, if you with your partner or whoever at the racetrack. But otherwise, yeah, worth every penny.
I've been to two Grand Prix now, and both times we've had Kangaroo TV, and I can't imagine life without it. Elaine, this is your first Grand Prix, so did you find it very useful?
Definitely, yeah. I was a bit worried. I've been a fan of Formula One for years, but I've never actually been to a race. And the reason I've never been is because I always thought, well, you see the cars for 2 seconds driving past and you don't know what's going on. But the Kangaroo TV was just amazing. You could watch them the whole way around the track. Like Dan said, you could pick which driver you wanted to watch and all sorts. It was absolutely fantastic.
So we've got Dan head-to-toe in Red Bull gear and Elaine head-to-toe in Williams gear. It doesn't look like it was a good day for either of you.
I don't know. I think qualifying was obviously disappointing for me and I wasn't expecting a lot from the race, but I think we finished higher up than I was hoping, so it was a good day for me.
We're sitting here because there's a huge queue to get into the paddock and onto the track. It seems like fans don't want to go home.
No, they don't. I guess trying to get value for money out of it, but it's been a long, long weekend and a great one at that.
Dan's a fan of Kangaroo TV, so you're in a minority.
I'm bitching about it unnecessarily. It is okay. It's not as bad as I'm making out. I don't know. Year on year, it should be better. It's a lot of money, £60. £60 for a weekend. And it's not like you can wander off with them because you have to authorise it for every race. You can't buy one outright if you go to more than one Grand Prix. There's things they could improve. That's all I'm saying.
Unfortunately, we forgot to do the fantasy races reminder.
Rich did email us.
Well, the thing is, we didn't forget, but every time I remembered, I wasn't near any technology.
Forgot.
To do it. No, I didn't. Yeah, well... Yeah, I did.
Rich said, don't forget to do the fantasy races reminder. I didn't see a fantasy races reminder.
Well, you put one in the comments and I thought, well, that's all right then. He's put it there, so I'll do it later.
Yeah.
And then later never happened.
It's just now.
So apologies if you didn't get to update your fantasy races.
Like
but
me.
I shouldn't have to remind you.
Okay.
That's my defence. But we will try harder in the future. So let's do the top five. In 5th place, Night Racers with 3801. In 4th, Shimano XC with 3882. In 3rd, NG Racing, 3890. 2nd place is Fledglings with 3921. And in 1st, Scuderia Big O'Tez with 4024. I got more points than you this week.
I'm not playing anymore.
But I'm still behind.
I'm still not playing.
I'm 116th.
Next week I'm going to choose no one.
What? That's rubbish.
I'm not having you beating me unless I make you beat me.
I'm still behind.
Yeah, it seems to be just a matter of time now.
Yeah. Little Mama and Cuherius Maximus both fell the most, 18 places, whilst Dr. V's team rose the most, 14 places.
Nice one, Dr. V.
Very good. Montoya's Ghost and Holy Slicks Batman.
Yeah, topical.
It's a great name. They both got the most points with 487, whilst Mess With The Bull got the least on 128. Feedback. Obviously, this is a bumper show, so we'll catch up with the good stuff from Facebook and Dropio later. But I did get one email that I wanted to share with you. It says, "Hi there. I'd just like to say a quick thank you to Mr. Christine after he spoke about GoMotorsport.net. I went along to the site and I'm now going on my first marshalling day on the 9th of August. The first steps to getting really, really close to a Grand Prix one day. Nice one. Cheers, Keith."
I like Mr. Christine.
Yeah?
That's a new one on me. Thanks, Keith. You can go with that one.
Okay.
We mentioned it before. We'll mention it again. GoMotorsport.net is the place if you're interested in getting into any kind of racing or, as Keith mentioned, marshalling or anything to do with motorsport in the UK. That's the website to go to. And Keith, please keep us up to date with how the marshalling goes because we'd love to hear more.
There's just one more thing I wanted to mention. You know how we spent the whole weekend with USP content?
Certainly do.
They gave us a little insight into the workings of the mind of Bernie.
Go on.
They've got a new DVD out, the Life Behind Lewis documentary.
Yes, which isn't about Lewis at all.
No.
It's about Anthony Davidson.
Obviously.
Slightly mistitled.
Yeah. Bernie gave them permission to use some track footage for an extortionate amount of money.
Yeah, and this is the flying lap of Anthony in Turkey, I believe.
Yeah.
Best qualifying lap of his career.
So they were allowed to use it once.
Actual Formula One footage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Once.
Not in any repeats.
Nope.
And not in the DVD.
No.
So we're going to have to buy that DVD then to see what they've done to replace it.
Well, yeah, they've had to take it out. What have they put in its place?
Do you think it's just black screen?
Maybe.
It might say, Bernie is a short little man. Hopefully. I'm hoping, fingers crossed, it's going to say that. I bet it doesn't. Yeah, a different, I guess, is, you know, we now know, though, from Friday, exactly how Bernie's mind works. And I think that tells us everything we need to know about how he does business.
So I think that's it for this show. It's been a bit of an epic.
Yeah. Longest show ever.
I bet probably. It will be.
Yeah, because some kind of record we've just broken there.
Yeah.
I hope people are still listening.
Yeah. We're supposed to be at Goodwood this weekend.
It's Friday.
But we're not.
Goodwood's already started. We're just a bit too tired. You're not very well. And we'll probably have a lying on Saturday as well. So maybe Saturday afternoon and Sunday is all we're going to catch at Goodwood. But next week, we'll do a full roundup of what we got up to then. Although it probably won't be quite as much as this show.
No. So we just have to thank Honda and USP Content one more time. And I really can't wait for things to get back to normal.